A few years ago, through a complicated series of events, I wound up buying a motorcycle for the first time. And the motorcycle that I owned is a 1999 model. It is a smaller engine, dual sport bike. It is not fancy in any way, shape, or form. But to me, it has been absolute kick in a hoot. But if I look at that motorcycle and I say, oh, I really wish it was a newer model. I wish it had better features. I wish it was newer. I wish it was better. I wish it was bigger. And I'm not saying I've never thought that, right? But that is an empty trail to go down. Instead, if I look at that and saying, wow, what an amazing blessing that I was able to obtain this. I had the resources to do it. I had the ability to learn how to ride it. And that God has kept me safe while doing it and allowed me to experience some really amazing, incredible things and experience some real joy and exhilaration. And if I, every time I throw my leg over that thing, I do it as an act of worship to God, then ironically, it does not matter how fancy the bike is or not. It is fulfilling that deep thing that I'm trying to find in the first place. Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And we're delighted to be back with you. It's just the two of us in the studio again today because we found another article that got us thinking and got us discussing. And I don't think it's got us arguing yet, but it did have us observing some things together. And we thought that we would share some of those observations with you. This one is by a pretty popular author. David found this one. And so, David, tell us a little bit about who wrote this and what they said.
Yeah, so I came across this article by Randy Alcorn, who is probably familiar to a lot of you who have been in Christian circles and have read Christian books for quite some time. He's written a lot of really compelling works. And I came across this article that's actually an excerpt from one of his books, 60 Days of Happiness, Discovering God's Promise of Relentless Joy is the title of that book. And this excerpt from it is specifically talking about how we can enjoy God's creation and that brings us happiness, and that enjoying different parts of life is something that brings God glory. And I think it's just a really interesting reminder. So to kind of summarize the article, is talking about how there are so many things in this world that we recognize are valuable and are significant and like that we enjoy, and that scripture gives us a picture of how we can see so many of the things that we recognize as valuable and as worthwhile as reflections of God's creation. And I think a really good encapsulation of his point is this sentence here that I'll quote. Things such as art, music, literature, sports, careers, and hobbies generate no light on their own. The light they bring comes from the Father of life's lights. I don't value the planets and the moon less because they don't shine by their own light. Likewise, I don't devalue my wife and the rest of my family, my coworkers, and my dog because they're secondary to God and reflect Him. On the contrary, I value them all more because God, who is primary, has made them who and what they are. And he goes on to explain how that brings them value. And so I thought that was really a really compelling point, and I thought was worth discussing. So, Jonathan, I'm curious to hear your initial observations.
I get so excited about this stuff. I think Randy Alcorn is an interesting author. I know him first because he wrote a book called Heaven, and it's a very compelling sort of treatise on heaven and why we should desire to go there, which I think can correct some silly ideas of heaven and go through the cultural imagination. And likewise, I think there's some silly ideas about happiness that goes through the cultural imagination. And that's really interesting because we live in this time where, you know, happiness in some ways is so easily obtained and yet is so fleeting for so many people, right? I mean, like if just a few generations back, people would have been pretty happy to have, you know, food on the table, shelter over their heads, and a little bit of free time to do something. And now we consider to be shelter and food as human rights and free time as almost overwhelming. And then an endless parade of things to kind of fill that free time with. And in that sense, happiness seems to be very obtainable. And yet there's this weird conundrum where the more happiness is accessible to us, the less happy that we are. And so I think something like this does an interesting thing because from a Christian standpoint, there's this intriguing problem where on one hand, there's people who want to say, well, everything's going to be awesome. God's going to protect me from all travails. And there's no sacrifice required. And there's a bit of prosperity gospel that creeps in here. And if I believe and trust in God, I'm just going to get blessed immensely. And that's not true, right? I mean, it says to take up your cross and follow Jesus, and that there was going to be trials and tribulations and all those kinds of things. And then on the other hand, you've got a brand of Christianity that says, you know, if you're not suffering, you ain't in. You know, in other words, if you're not having the hardest time possible, if things aren't just an absolute struggle and you're sweating blood, then you're clearly not serious about your faith. And I think, like so many things in our Christian walk, this is a both and type of thing. Mm-hmm. This is a situation where there's a little bit of a weird spiritual judo, if you will, which is that the reality is that we worship in our celebration and finding happiness and joy, and our faith allows us to find happiness and joy in some of the unlikeliest of places, so that things that look like or appear to be suffering are often gateways to a deeper joy and a richer sense of happiness and satisfaction and understanding of who we are than not. And that's just there's a rich vein to mine there, and it's one that's not talked about as much. But boy, David, from my perspective, getting some sense of this can be absolutely transformative in how you live your life day to day and moment to moment.
Yeah, I think it's fun to think through just how God works through so many of the circumstances that we have in our day-to-day lives. And I think it really can transform the way that you approach your day-to-day life in just how you view the purpose of just each of the individual things that you have going on. And I think it's really a challenge to have a full understanding of what the purpose of happiness and of suffering is, like you were mentioning. And it's because our default, we want to be happy. We want to be comfortable. That's the thing that we strive for, just naturally speaking. But happiness is not the point of Christian living. Happiness is not counteracting Christian living. So happiness is not necessarily against what Christ has called us to do, but it's not the ultimate goal. And at the same time, suffering is a part of Christian living, but it's also not the goal. And so I think sometimes we end up looking at both of these elements and we think that we have to make sure that we have like enough of one, or that one of these is the goal, or we have to be looking for just like the right amount of one of those, when that's not really what God's looking for us to do. Like, God's not looking for us to have the right amount of happiness or the right amount of suffering. God's looking for us to build his kingdom and just to do that to the fullest extent that we can. There's going to be times where that involves more happiness. There's going to be times where that involves more suffering. And usually the two will end up intersecting in a lot of ways. There's been points in my life where I've realized that I was chasing after one of the effects rather than one of the results that I should be looking towards. I was chasing not after the goal, but after what comes along with chasing after the ultimate goal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that there's a parallel here, which is we see this happen so many times where the thing that is being celebrated, you know, you're looking, I think, how do you say this, David? You're looking for the results of the goal. Say that sentence again.
Yeah, I'm not tied to that wording per se. I think that we could workshop that and find something better. But I think looking for the things that you get along the way to the goal rather than the goal itself.
So I think, but the goal itself is interesting here, because I think people expect that goal to be some sort of deep satisfaction, right? Mm. And so pushing that a little bit, it's like, you know, I think that, and I think you mentioned your own experience, David. For me, I find myself always doing this, and like when I get to, and there's some place in life, when I make this much money, when I own this house, when I have this vehicle, when I have this amount of vacation, when I do, then I will have arrived in some fashion. And it took me an embarrassingly long time to find out that I never arrived. You know, like that the appetites just grew in some nature and some form. And so I think people chase some of these happiness things because they're looking for some sort of deeper fulfillment. And the irony is that the more you chase it, the more the thing that you're chasing becomes an idol. And the more it becomes an idol, the more empty it becomes. And the less you get, the harder you chase. Mm-hmm. And there's just a very cruel system there that does entrap people. And so I have a friend who owns a very, very nice sports car. And he's quite obsessed with it. And he's extraordinarily talented as a mechanic and as somebody's ability to build this thing. But it's also interesting that when he drives it, he's absolutely terrified of getting it dusty, of getting it rained on, doing all these kinds of things. So it's always so intriguing. It feels to me from the outside as a bit of a burden for him. He can't really enjoy it because it has to be perfect. And it can't be perfect enough because there's always somebody out there who will build a slightly better one, or there's always something else that he can do. And so instead of, you know, to me, it's the nicest restored vehicle I know of anybody. Like, I don't know anybody else who owns a nicer restored vehicle. And it's unobtainable from my perspective and the kinds of resources that I have. And so you look at that and go, that would be really cool. But it's not that for that person. You know, he's more spent and consumed with worry of it and a constant comparison and seeing how it falls short. Now, this sounds a little bit strange, but, you know, a few years ago, through a complicated series of events, I wound up buying a motorcycle for the first time. And the motorcycle that I owned is a 1999 model. It is a smaller engine, dual sport bike. It is not fancy in any way, shape, or form. It was not highly desirable as a model when it was first released. But to me, it has been absolute kick and a hoot. But I'm not confused, and I don't hold myself up as some paradigm here, as some virtue. I'm just saying it's interesting in that if I look at that motorcycle and I say, oh, I really wish I had, and then I insert whatever model I want, whatever, I wish it was a newer model, I wish it had better features, I wish it was newer, I wish it was better, I wish it was bigger. And I'm not saying I've never thought that, right? But that is an empty trail to go down. Instead, if I look at that and saying, wow, what an amazing blessing that I was able to obtain this. I had the resources to do it. I had the ability to learn how to ride it. And the God has kept me safe while doing it and allowed me to experience some really amazing, incredible things and experience some real joy and exhilaration. And if I, every time I throw my leg over that thing, I do it as an act of worship to God, then ironically, it does not matter how fancy the bike is or not. It is fulfilling that deep thing that I'm trying to find in the first place. And that has been an intriguing kind of exercise for me. Am I able to enjoy every single thing that I have as a blessing for God, which then prioritizes it correctly, contextualizes it correctly, and allows me conversely to enjoy it deeply while also spurring me to perhaps improve it, right? I would like to buy a nicer bike. I would like to make some repairs and upgrades to it, but I'm not consumed by doing that because I'm trying to compare or I'm trying to chase something empty. Each of those things feels like a unique opportunity to experience the richness and vastness of God's creativity and blessing. And I don't claim that I've gotten that all right, but I have been just intrigued by the whole line of thought and avenues that opens up. So it's slightly different what you said, Dave, but a little bit of a parallel.
No, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think the point that you brought up about contextualizing the blessings is really powerful there, because I think that's where we end up getting it wrong a lot of the time, is that when we don't take the proper context. The way that I liked Randy Alcorn's phrasing in the article was that he was talking about so many of those things like art, music, literature, even family members as good things that should be enjoyed, but they all are able to be enjoyed because they are reflections of the ultimate joy that comes from God. They are worth enjoying. God has made them to be enjoyed because he made them that way. And so there's a lot of things where I think that we can end up just focusing so much on the thing itself. So in your case, you can end up focusing so much on the motorcycle itself that it's not that every time that you're like on the bike and like all throughout your ride and every time that you are thinking about riding or interacting with the bike, the only thing that you're thinking about is God. That's not necessarily what that means. I think it's easy to take it too far. I think that just means that when you are thinking about the bike, you're not so consumed about it that you're distracted from the other things that God has called you to. It's not serving as something that is detracting from God's ultimate call to your life. Because I think that God does call us to enjoy the blessings that he's given to us and to take full advantage of those things that he's given to us. It's just, do we have the proper context for how to enjoy them in a way that, yes, does bring us some happiness, but ultimately at the same time brings glory to God? And how do we find the context for what that looks like? And I think, again, this is probably something that looks a little bit different for just about everybody.
I think you said that it's not that you're thinking about God and riding a bike, and that's true. It's not like, you know, it's like the same with going to church or something like that. However, I do think there's something interesting there in that when you talk about these sort of things, yeah, Alcorn lists art, music, literature, sports, careers, hobbies. What's the characteristic between all those things? The characteristic is that they are things that remove you from the day-to-day routines of your life. Now, there's a whole other conversation to be had about the celebration and the worship of God in the daily routines, which I think is equally, if not more so, powerful, right? So this is not an either and. This is a different thing. But there's a process that when you are pursuing art, music, literature, sports, careers, hobbies, you're looking for something that creates a distraction, escape, a change of perspective from what you're doing in your normal day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And so often those become idols because you pursue them as means into themselves, which is what Alcorn's saying here, right? I mean, this instead of the reflection, and that they ultimately leave you empty, which is what I was talking about before. There's another way to go about that, which is the interruption of your pattern causes you to think differently. And you can think differently in a couple of unproductive ways or the most productive way. And I think for me, I'm looking for an interruption to my pattern that reminds me to worship the one who granted the blessing. And in doing so, then the riding becomes an act of worship, not because, to David's point, every minute that I'm riding, every mile I go by, I'm thinking directly of God. Sometimes that happens. That's not typical, right? Mm-hmm. But instead is that I'm getting to experience the world that God has placed me in, the opportunities given me. I get a new perspective and all the stuff that I see every day that have become mundane. All of a sudden, they become new because I'm seeing them from a different way, because I'm having to think differently. And that opportunity to think differently is an opportunity to connect to God in a different way that deepens my understanding of him and deepens his appreciation of what he has put in my life. And again, I'm in no way making the claim that that is my constant acceptance. Oftentimes on my motorcycle, it's more a line of, I hope this thing starts and then I hope I don't kill myself. But even that, right? The hope I don't kill myself is a powerful piece of riding a motorcycle, right? There is an awareness of my mortality and my fragileness and the necessity of God's protection that I simply do not have when I get into a car, fasten my seatbelt, and turn the key, right? There's a whole different perspective on that when I throw my leg over the motorcycle, pull the clutch in, and hit the ignition button, because there is a very clear awareness of how fragile my life is. And I don't know that that's a bad thing. I think that it's easy for me to think that my life is under my entire control. And it's a good thing to be reminded of God's sovereignty in those areas. And it's not so much that I advocate you ride motorcycles. It's that do the things that you pursue, do they enable you to have that perspective shift? And if they do, they themselves become deeper and richer and more exciting, even as they then are safe from becoming idols.
Choosing the right resources for your high schooler can feel overwhelming. That's why we created Equip by Unbound, a program for 9th through 11th graders that combines skills training, coaching, and community to help students thrive now and in the future. Through life and study skills courses, worldview training, and hands-on projects, students build purpose, resilience, and confidence. Don't wait. Enrollment prices go up soon. Learn more and enroll at beunbound.us/equip.
I really like that. And if you'll, Jonathan, follow along with me as I think out loud about this idea for a second. I think it's worth thinking through with the things that you're choosing to spend your time on, the things that you're taking enjoyment, taking happiness from, just what can be gained from. I think it's something that's worth exercising, because I think it's easy for us to just default to just going to the things that we enjoy and just saying, I'm going to do more of this because this makes me happy. And I think it's worth taking a moment and thinking, okay, why am I enjoying this? And what am I actually getting out of it? Because I think that different people in different circumstances can sometimes take different things away from the same enjoyable activity. So I think for some people, just depending on their temperament, they could end up having motorcycles be much more of a thing that's just like they're getting away from all of their problems and they're using it as an avoidance mechanism. Or if we take another common one, if you take watching TV shows, for a lot of people, it's just a way to completely just turn off their brain and to just not engage with the world. And it's just a way to distract themselves for a bit. But for other people, it's a way to just watching a TV show is a way to engage their brain and think about storytelling, thinking about humor, and is a way to actually engage with the creativity that can come from a TV show. And they can actually gain real value from that. And so I think it's worth considering
what things can I do? What things has God made me to enjoy that I can also gain value from? And what things am I looking to enjoy, looking to spend my time on that aren't actually gaining me value from or are actually doing more harm than good? And I don't think it's something that we have to do a like full 5-point analysis on necessarily for every single thing. Sometimes I just want a chocolate chip cookie because I want a chocolate chip cookie, okay? Chocolate chip cookies make me happy. But, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Maybe that's just my personal bias. I don't know. What do you think, Jonathan?
No, well, chocolate chip cookies with milk is what you need. I mean, like that's, it's the combination. And if you ice that milk for like 5 minutes before you drink it, I mean, now we're talking sublime here. And,
okay.
And we're pretty close. I don't know what Elkhorn's definition of heaven is precisely. I can't remember from the book, but it's got to be pretty close. No, I think that's right. Maybe the only issue I'd have there is that the word value, because I think I know what you're trying to say, but it's not so much like a measurement piece, right? It's more of a, because value implies some gain. And I think that that brings us into a trap of constant productivity. And I don't think that's actually what you meant, David. But just for clarity's sake, it would be, I'm more interested in the words like perspective and awareness and those kinds of things. I think the observation there, it's not some 5 points. Like that sounds wearying, right? This is a practice skill. And this is where we can kind of turn the corner a little bit and get practical. You know, this sounds like some ethereal, academic, super spiritualized, like, oh, there's Jonathan. Every time he's getting on his bike, it's like a prayer. No, it's not that at all. It's a spiritual discipline. It is a discipline. It is a habit. It's a habit-forming thing. And the habit-forming thing doesn't come with this constant checklist. It comes with a constant awareness, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like before I eat the cookie, I'm like, okay, I'm going to say, just take a moment and think about all the workers that produce these chocolate chips. And it's like, no, it's not that. But it is this attitude of gratitude. God, thank you for this good thing. Like, just as simple as that, right? And then an enjoyment like, wow, this tastes so right. You know what I mean? Like that. And you see that not as a, and I think, you know, to kind of take our whole track here, it's like, and then it's like, well, I'm going to have another one and another one and another one because chocolate chip cookies are good. No, that's the idle thing. You're going to get fat.
Yep.
Right? I mean, like, that's not good, right? But instead, it's more of a, oh, this deepened my appreciation for life because, yeah, I'm with you, David. Life with a chocolate chip cookie is better than life without a chocolate chip cookie. Right?
Hey, man.
it's going to enrich whatever experiences you're having. And so I think the exciting thing here is that then it's not a measurement of how many chocolate chip cookies you have. It's not a measurement of whether or not you own a motorcycle or a sports car that's real fancy or anything else. It's a measurement, it's a discipline of seeing and appreciating the good things God has given, seeing them as a reflection of Him and having that discipline to notice that, which then does some really wonderful things. It guards you against finding an idol. It deepens your appreciation of the thing itself. It leads you into a curiosity that allows you to pursue that, and it deepens your relationship to God. That's a pretty big trifecta of ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes in this thing that's fun to begin with, right? We're talking about be fun stuff, you know, again, back to Elkhorn, art, music, literature, sports, careers, hobbies, you know, I mean, like things that are worth leaning into. And the argument here is that they can be more. And doing so, they become richer and deeper and more exciting. And I think that's, you know, we talk in Unbounded being extraordinary and ordinary. This is a way to make the ordinary extraordinary. And there is a magic and a mystery and a delight in that that's worth pursuing and not a bad return for a little bit of application of spiritual discipline.
Yeah. I think that's super, super encouraging, the fact that there we can still enjoy a lot of the same things that we already enjoy and we can get more out of it. It can be something that is not just relaxation, but is something that builds the kingdom of God. And we can do that while we are gaining happiness and enjoyment from it. And I think that's just such a freeing knowledge and a realization to have when I want to go and spend time on some of my hobbies. And I think it's just such a good practice to look at some of those things that you are doing that you do take enjoyment out of and to just ask the question, like, hey, what more can I gain out of this that I can use to glorify God? What insights can I gain from it? And I think one of the best ways to do that is to do it in context of community, which is something that we talk about a lot in Unbound. Sometimes there are things that are enjoyed in isolation, but I know, at least for me, a lot of the time with some of my hobbies, whether it's like watching even something as simple as watching a movie or going for a run or just doing something like that, or even just reading a book. Like, obviously, I'm not going to be reading a book alongside somebody else, but I can talk about what my observations about the book after I read the book. I can go for a run by myself, but then I can talk with other friends who go for runs and talk with them about our experiences and the things that we're trying to accomplish in our training. And we can talk about the shows or the movies that we're watching and just see what sort of takeaways that we're having from them. Looking at the things that we enjoy in context of community helps us to gain that perspective that you were just talking about, and helps us to not just see it as this is a thing that I'm doing in isolation, but this is something that God has given to not just me, but to all of us to be able to enjoy and to have as a reminder that he's given us things that are worth enjoying and worth having in our lives.
Amen. There's a real Narnian aspect to this too, right? I mean, like, you know, this ability to find the extraordinary in the ordinary is like finding a kingdom in the back of a wardrobe. And, you know, Lucy didn't get full enjoyment out of the kingdom until she convinced the others to come with her. And so there's an aspect here that, you know, this attitude allows you to take your everyday normal circumstances and find great mystery and joy and depth and breadth in them. And then David's right. You look for a way to exponentially increase that. And the way to do that is to add community. And you combine those two things and you find some really unique opportunities, deeper fulfillment, deeper understanding, and the list goes on. So, well, with that, as we come to the end of this particular episode, we might call you to join us in some of that community. And Unbound is, for us, those of us who work here, those of us who participate in the programs, we think of Unbound primarily as a community. And our flagship program, Ascend, is probably our best example of that. It's marked by us being together four times a year at live events. And of course, then we're connected by technology the rest of the time. And the relationships, the connections, the shared experiences does indeed create a very unique, a very special, a very deep, and a very powerful community. And there is certainly lots and lots of opportunities to experience the ordinary and have it be extraordinary. And as an example, you know, our students travel a lot. And if, you know, I'm flying by myself through the airport, that is an ordinary experience that is often marked by frustration and boredom and aggravation and all those kinds of things. And so what's the worst thing that can happen to you when you miss a flight, right? Or when a flight's delayed or something. But if you're traveling with an Unbound team or you're traveling with Unbound students, I've actually had students tell me, I'm Mr. Brush. I'm really hoping for that flight delay going home. I'm hoping that we miss our connection in that airport. Why? Because they're part of a community, right? Because all of a sudden that becomes really exciting to be all trapped in Charlotte Airport together. And there's a whole crew and they're going to go on a new adventure. And so there's a really interesting example of that. If you're interested in that kind of community, if you're interested in what we're talking about, if you want to learn more about that, then we really encourage you to go check out our website at beunbound.us. Learn about all of our programs there. And specifically, if you're interested in the Ascend program and joining that community, then we encourage you to schedule an appointment with our admissions team as soon as possible. We're in a unique position where over half of our class is filled coming into really what is the hottest part of our recruiting season. And so if you're willing to be a part of that, this is definitely one of those years where earlier is better because we're looking perhaps for our first time at having some limited availability and slots as we come into the hot part of our recruiting season. And so check us out at beunbound.us. Until then, and the next time we talk, we hope that whatever hobbies, whatever things that you're pursuing, whatever diversions you're after, that this gives you some perspective and ability to look at them differently. And in doing so, they become deeper, richer, more exciting, more interesting, that you protected from idolizing. And instead, in doing them, pursuing them, you get to see the reflected glory of God himself. And with that, we will challenge you until we talk to you next time to be unbound.
Now I just want a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, just like, as you're talking, I'm like, I got the milk, but I do not have the cookie. And I was like, I don't have anything close to cookie. Close I got the cookie is a peanut butter cracker, a saltine with peanut butter on it.
Oh, no, we're close.